Daily Traditionalist on Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Traditionalist. Today's date is Monday, the 27th of November, 2017. It's the start of a new week and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and I'm joined by my good friend and hopefully semi-regular co-host here at the Daily Traditionalist, the main man behind the London Forum, Mr. Jez Turner. Jez, how are you doing today?
Very well. Salutations to you all.
You sound like you got a little bit of a cough there just as we started.
Yes.
Always goes that way, doesn't it? Always goes that way. I hear you were out doing some Christmas shopping the other day when you had a bit of a surprise. I saw some of this on the news. Oxford Circus, there was a big scare. Tommy Robinson tweeted that it was probably jihadi terrorists. I thought it was probably jihadi terrorists. It looked like there was a bit of a stampede going on and people were terrified. And then afterwards they told us that they were looking for a little Negro suspect and some Pakistani suspect. I don't know if they actually got them, but they said it wasn't anything to do with terrorism. But surely the stampede and the shock and the horror and the fear that everybody had, I think that was to do with terrorism. What was it like? You say you were nearby at the time. What happened? What did you see happen there that maybe we didn't see on the news?
Well, first of all, whenever you see this sort of thing in London, you see people running towards you and screaming and talking about gunfire. First of all, I thought it's not terrorists. It's going to be, well, it could either be terrorists or blacks shooting each other. Usually blacks use knives, but they do occasionally shoot each other with guns. So I sort of had the feeling it would be blacks shooting each other, non-whites, basically. Everyone was running towards me, and they said Oxford Circus is closed, there's shooting in the station underground. Now, there have been a lot of stabbings at railway stations, at tube stations, black on black, non-white on non-white over gang warfare, drugs, whatever. It's a good place for them to meet and fight, so to speak. Victoria Station was closed for a while several months ago when a lad was stabbed to death there. So I thought that, and turning to the folk, to the people, what was apparent was the fear of the people who were running away. So I just sat outside a cafe and had a coffee, waiting for it to all die down. Then I went further up later on. And there was police vans, lots of police vans with blue lights flashing, and people were saying it was a black chap, and I thought perhaps it was firecrackers if it was a false alarm, because they do, for some reason, non-whites in London, they seem to throw firecrackers around and bangers, what have you. But then very quickly the message came out from anyone in a uniform that it was a false alarm, and to me it just seemed a bit of a, they were protesting too much. You know, it was a bit, they were a bit too sure of themselves. It didn't seem quite real. They didn't believe their own propaganda. And the police, they could see the panic on the police's faces. And very quickly after that, every tube station in London, in the center of London, seemed to have armed police outside scanning the crowds. So to me, I think the police are expecting something. And as you've seen today, there's been an ISIS warning gone up about attacking Christmas shoppers and markets. But definitely the police thought it was real, and they are expecting something like this. And they are very keen, the authorities are very keen on not spreading panic and not hurting the Christmas shopping business.
Yeah, it's when I heard this, soon after they said, there hasn't actually been shots fired. And I thought, well, obviously there was noises heard. Well, perhaps it was firecrackers then. And perhaps it was blacks being irresponsible and letting firecrackers off. I mean, I remember after an atrocity in France, there were people that were all gathered at the memorial and someone let a firecracker off. And there was an absolute stampede and people were really harmed during this stampede. And I thought, well, what you've got there is this is the damage that's being done. Is that when people just hear the noise of a firecracker, they're terrified and they stampede and they crush one another. And this is what this has done to the nation. We're all living in a state of fear where just the sound of a loud noise is enough to terrify people and cause people to have heart attacks.
I remember the incident exactly is in Paris, wasn't it? They were all stuck by these flowers, lighting candles to the victims, saying, "We're not afraid, we're not afraid." And suddenly, bang, 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 bang. They all flee, screaming, falling over each other, panicking, you know, trampling over each other to get out of the way. Just shows the nonsense of this, "We're not afraid, we can carry on as before," carry on as before, because we're not carrying on as before. You can tell it in people's faces when you talk to them. Each time one of these attacks happens, even a false attack, even a false alarm, white people begin to say things they wouldn't otherwise say. I was chatting to a girl, and I thought she was a typical anti-racist girl. I know this woman, and she's been in Sweden for a while. She's come back from Sweden, and I did sort of gently ask her about Sweden and the violence and the ethnic violence, and she didn't take up the signal. She just behave like a non-political person would or an anti-racist person would. We have to speak in code language in Britain today. We have to tread carefully. We meet someone, we try and judge their views by putting out a few feelers, giving out a few code words, and if the code words come back, then we can go a bit further. But she seemed to me a sort of woman who would be very offended if I mentioned the word race or Muslims, you know. And yet after this false alarm, she was furious, you know. She was saying, "London isn't London anymore. I couldn't get a bacon sandwich. I went to a cafe for a bacon sandwich and they gave me a turkey bacon sandwich," or something. And then it all came out. It all came out. The floodgates opened. And this gives me a bit of hope, because this shows that even people who you would think are diametrically opposed to our views, deep within them, it's still there. It's still there. And all it takes is a spark, a little hole in the dam, and it all comes out. You know, it's human nature. Our views are human nature. You can't, you can suppress them, you can oppress them, but you can't eliminate those views. They're there waiting for the chance to come out.
Of course, they do come out, and then people are told that they're being racist. And I think that's one of the best ways for us to recruit people, is when they just talk about just naturally held fears of what's going on, and then they get attacked for being racist for saying this. I mean, I know people that won't go to London anymore, just won't go to London at all. People that used to go there regularly because of the fear of what's going to happen. Now, ISIS have just sent out this video, and they're attacking Father Christmas in it, and they're saying, "We are going to go after your Christmas markets." And all the way across Europe now, they've got all these great big bollards in front of the Christmas markets and armed police. They've got a few little bits of tinsel on the bollards, trying to jazz them up a little bit. But how is that Christmas? I mean, this is like Christmas out in Palestine, with the Jews going after the Palestinians that one Christmas when they started a war. You know, we're living in the middle of a war zone. And the only way to stop this is to remove kebab. Doesn't matter what security they put in, we're always going to be at threat unless we remove them.
It's rather like what happened in parts of our cities when mass immigration happened. Nobody talked about it, at least publicly, at least in the papers. But everyone felt themselves under attack. There was muggings, there was knifings, there was robberies, there was white girls being raped, there was crime, there was noise, there was overcrowding, and the whites began to move out. The schools were falling apart. Good schools just went downhill so fast, and they began to move out. They didn't talk about it. Now with the internet, people are talking about all kinds of things, even though they try to close us down. And yeah, I mean, the best thing they could do, our enemies, is to kill Father Christmas. I mean, you think of the average little child, or even any person who remembers his childhood, and to see, you know, a group of jihadis going and shooting Father Christmas, that would be our best recruiting tool, you know. That really would.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say this, Father Christmas, but, you know, in order to save Christmas, you may have to be assassinated.
Well, I think young people are much more likely to see what's going on and point out the fact that the emperor wears no clothes. Because, you know, they're more likely to actually speak up and say that and point out the inconsistencies. As we get older, we give in to peer pressure a lot more. And Katie Hopkins has been speaking out, and she gets better and better all the time. I check her Twitter feed, and she just gets better and better. She's speaking up for the white farmers in South Africa now that are being attacked. She's retweeting, it's okay to be white. And she was speaking in Lewis on Saturday in a church filled with, you know, the usual people, concerned members of the public, the elderly, hundreds of Antifa. Broke in through the church, attacked the elderly. There's blood in the church. She had to be removed out of the church. And the BBC are reporting it as peaceful protesters. And it was a violent attack. Violent attack, like the one we've seen happen to the Forum a while back. Just like that, I should imagine. I know what this is like when this happens. And there's no greater wake-up call than when something like that happens. And that's now happened to a major personality who is speaking out against this.
And right? She will be able to tell the truth about the attack. She will be able to, you know, this won't be covered up and forgotten. This will be, she'll be able to speak out about this. Now, interesting you mentioned Lewis, because this, on Friday night, before the Saturday, Dennis McShane spoke, and he's one of these Jews. His real name is Dennis Masalotov or something like that. It's some long Jewish name. And he became a sort of, you know, he made his name working class English, working class British, to sort of curry favour with Labour, rather like Jack Straw. He's not really called Jack Straw. So Dennis McShane was speaking at a conference in Lewis on how we should not leave the European Union, why Brexit was bad for us, why we should ignore the result, why we should have another referendum or just ignore it, and why mass immigration was good for us. And, you know, this is the difference. When we go and speak at, you know, we heckle their meeting. We ask questions politely. What does the opposition do? They smash the meeting up and kill people. And that's their aim. Now, Lewis is a Sussex county town, very old town. There's a very nice castle there. The Battle of Lewis was a very famous battle in the Middle Ages. So I would say that the Antifa, as they're called, they've come from Brighton. Brighton has a lot of Jews who left London, who fled down to Brighton for various reasons, and that's where the Antifa are. They're in Brighton, and they come up there. There's a heavy Jewish population in Brighton. Always has been. If you ever want to know about Brighton, you should read a book called Brighton Rock by Graham Greene. Graham Greene was one of us in a mild way. His brother was even more one of us. He used to be a member of the League of Empire Loyalists and wrote for Candor. And in this film, in this book, rather, Brighton Rock, doesn't really occur much in the film, you see the takeover of the criminal underworld by Jewish gangs who push out the Irish Catholic gangs, and Pinky's gang is pushed out by the Jewish gangs who control the Brighton racecourse and the betting. And he speaks of these Semitic faces closing in on him with their cutthroat razors. So, yeah, it's Katie Hopkins. It's once the truth begins to get out there, even in a sort of partial sense, it gathers momentum, and people, when people are allowed to discuss things, they get to the truth eventually. So very interesting how this will play out in the press.
The Cray twins were Jewish, weren't they? That's not very often spoken about.
Yeah, there was Jewish blood in them, and their network was heavily Jewish. Yes, it's not really spoken of much. But what happened in the 60s and the 50s was, Whitechapel's always been Jewish. You know, it's the only place that Oswald Mosley didn't march through. And he said, I don't march through Jewish areas. I march through the East End, but not through Jewish areas. And that means Whitechapel. And the Blind Beggar was where they hung out, which is opposite the Whitechapel Hospital. It's where I think it was Jack the Hat McVitie was killed, the Blind Beggar pub. It's still there, the pub. Some very nice nurses. But go there for a drink. They come from Eastern Europe to work in the hospital and are shocked at what they see. But it's now a very heavily Muslim area. One of the largest mosques in Britain is at Whitechapel. And if you ever want to see what our multiracial paradise looks like, go down to Whitechapel Tube Station. Come out of there. Do it on a Friday afternoon, Friday evening, when the mosque is turning out, or people are going to the mosque and the call to prayer is coming out. You will realize it's not England anymore.
Do they play that call to prayer then? Do they actually play
very loud?
That? You hear
very
that?
Loud, very loud. Yes, it's very loud. It's sobering sound to hear in many ways. Michel Houellebecq has spoken about this, the French author. But I mean, you have to step back and say to yourself, hang on a minute, you know, we could deal with these Muslims very easily if it wasn't for the Jews in our midst. And I think I will refer all your listeners to an article by Tobias Langdon in the Occidental Observer, and it's called Wicked Muslims, Saintly Jews. We mustn't forget who brought the Muslims here. We mustn't forget who's benefiting from them being here. So, yes, we have to put our own interests first, white interests, not Jewish interests, not anybody else's interests. We have to do what's good for us. And I very much hope that Katie Hopkins eventually will come to the real truth. She'll go full Radio Aaron and you'll have her on your show.
Oh, I'd love that. I'd love that. She definitely seems to be getting better. I mean, she, over the summer, she was with the Defend Europe guys, the ones that had that boat that went out there to turn back the invasion force. And she met up with Lauren Southern and Brittany Pettibone. I mean, they're rightish. They're further towards the right than probably further towards the right than Britain First and EDL. And she was spending time with them. And it seems to be since then that she seems to have woken up to the racial thing. And just last week, we've had Tommy Robinson has been tweeting about these Jews that have been advocating for more refugees to come into Britain, and saying that, well, they're not advocating for them to go to Israel. I mean, that is a huge change to hear him say anything negative about the Jews, because they are the ones that do all this advocating for them to come into our country. And it's total double standards, because they'll say, well, we are refugees and Britain let us in, so we have to advocate for Britain to let in these other refugees. But there's no need for that. They've got their own country now. They've got Israel. If they want to help out these other refugees in the ways that they were helped out, then it needs to be opening up their own home to them, opening up Israel to them. And of course they won't. They will kick them out from Israel. They will sterilize the Negroes, and they'll sterilize the Negro Jews that go to Israel. And the rest of the people that try to get sanctuary in Israel, they will send them to Sweden. They'll give them to the great humanitarian superpower of the North. But they certainly won't stand up and say, we will welcome them. It has to be done in our countries, only in white countries. This is the thing, the civic nationalists, they might speak up against immigration, but they won't point out the reasons behind it. The people that are advocating for it. I think it was one of these American Zionist groups that said that was the most important issue for American Jews, was to advocate for immigration to America. This was a couple of years back. And one of the things was to fight Trump, and the other was to advocate for more refugees to America. It's something that they just can't help doing, isn't it, Jez?
Yeah, the chief business of a conqueror of the world is the weakening of the people over whom they rule. And immigration weakens us. Miscegenation weakens us. So, yes, it's they know this is the way to go ahead, the way for them to cement their rule. Whether they know it instinctively or consciously, it's what they're doing. And the chief point about these groups like Tommy Robinson, Katie Hopkins, these sort of groups, is they have time and they have money. They can do research that we can't. They have lots of time, lots of money, and they can do things we cannot. So I never really knock these groups, because at least they're bringing people halfway to the truth. I'm not very happy when they criticize us for giving out the whole truth, but we don't have the time and the money and the resources to even do a tiny part of the work they do. So I'm always hopeful. I'm always grateful for what they do. And what you said about Tommy Robinson is very interesting. Is a very heartening indeed. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to. I wish that they would do more. I mean, Anne-Marie Waters, for instance, she's been very good over the last couple of weeks. I've been listening to her speeches, and she's talking about whites and talking about the white interests and how the white birth rates are going down. We need to get the white birth rates up, and she's talking about race. She's not talking so much about a religion or Western civilization, but she's talking about the white race and the white race being under threat. And that's fantastic to hear somebody saying that, because you won't hear Britain First saying that. You won't really hear EDL saying that. The only issue I have with her is she calls Islam fascism, and she calls Muslims fascists. And this I really don't get, because the people that are attacking her are the anti-fascists. So it's no good to then go calling the enemy fascists. She should just forget about that. Forget about calling people fascist. She may not want to be associated with us. That's absolutely fine. But why call the enemy fascists, and why point to us and say neo-Nazis or the far right? Because that's just going to split her support, because we get a lot of support. She gets a lot of support, but a lot of our support wouldn't support her because of the way she attacks the far right. And that's a real shame, because that's a lot of people that could help her out. I know of people that have been to hear her speak and have asked her questions that are on the far right, that are on our side. And, they've been there to her meetings, and they could get a lot more people to go to her meetings as well. But she will not people like the National Front. And the National Front, they really aren't saying that different to her. They're saying we've got to get rid of the Muslims, we've got to repatriate the people that are here, and we've got to save the white, we've got to save the white race. And the National Front are the only explicitly ethno-nationalist political party that we've got in Britain, and we really need to support them. I went to their meeting on Saturday, Jay. Is it a good meeting? The Southwest meeting, first opening of the Southwest National Front, the first meeting. So if any of our listeners are in the Southwest and they want to get involved with the National Front, you need to get in touch with me, or get in touch with Julie Lake, and we can sort them out for the next meeting. But I would really like to see some kind of unity, Jez, between these civic nationalists and us. I agree with what you say there about supporting them when they do right.
I'm wary of the word unity. I think in a sense, if there is some sort of unity to be found, it should be under the radar. We shouldn't throw all our eggs in the same basket. There was a recent report by a very well-funded, influential think tank in London, and I forget the name of the think tank. It's some long, inane, sort of respectable-sounding name. And they basically accused the alt-right, the far-right, of using NATO propaganda techniques with our memes. We were so effective. They also said the way ahead for them, for the Jews, for the people, the liberals, those who are opposed to saving the white race, was to exploit the differences in our factions to drive a wedge between the ideologies, between the personalities, between the various groups. So, yes, I think the way to go at the way ahead for us is to bear that in mind, and not to try and exacerbate differences, not try to sort of argue over little things. I always take the example of Rorke's Drift. Rorke's Drift was a small farmstead in South Africa, and a group of British soldiers were defending this farmstead, and a whole Zulu army began to attack them down the hills. And the British soldiers were outnumbered, but they had discipline, training, and bravery, and very good rifles. And they kept their cool, and they kept shooting at the Zulus. They kept killing Zulus. They didn't argue among themselves. So my motto is this: shoot the Zulus. You know, we can argue afterwards, after we've won. Don't shoot the Zulus. Because our enemies want us to argue among ourselves. And if we stop arguing among ourselves, that is unity enough. Really, that's enough.
Yeah, support people when they do the right thing, and criticize them when they don't. But if they're doing the right thing, then cease with the criticism. That's the way that I try to be. I find it interesting there that we've got evidence of them actually saying this is our official policy, is to encourage these differences and drive a wedge between these different groups. I mean that proves it. That, you know, I mean, I get comments from people: don't you know Tommy Robinson is a Zionist? Of course I know this, but I've moved beyond thinking, well, I don't want to support him because he's a Zionist, because he's all we've got. You know, if that is all you have got, then you can't really start demanding caviar if someone is offering you bread and water. That's the way that I see it.
Yeah, I mean, a man in the desert dying of thirst doesn't say, oh, I don't drink... I don't drink that brand of mineral water.
Give me champagne instead. Third Reich champagne or nothing. You know, we can't afford to do that. It's too late in the game. We're too far gone to be demanding that we're not going to do anything unless we get the absolutely perfect leader and the perfect party. Because that will never come along. We had that 70 years ago. And we've moved on from that now. We can't go back in time. This is why I think, you know, we have to concentrate on the Muslims, because that's what people can see around them. They don't see the Jews. They see the Muslims. They see the Muslim rape gangs. They see the Muslim terrorists. They're the ones that we have to highlight their crimes and then say to people, and these are the people that are doing something about it. That's the difference between us and these, you know, the Daily Express and the Daily Mail, I think, Jez, because they'll point out the crimes sometimes that the Muslims are doing, or that the black crime rate. But any time they feature somebody who's doing something about it, they attack them. If For Britain are in there or Britain First, they'll attack them. And yet these groups are the only groups that are doing something about the threat which the Daily Express and the Daily Mail shows in their pages. And the reason for that is because they're in the hands of Jews.
Yes, Seneca once said that luxury has condemned us to weakness. And I have to say it is quite a shame when you look at the movement, shall we say, who are opposed to white genocide, whether they are the Britain First type moderate groups who don't really understand what they're doing, or whether it's the hardline groups. I think it's rather sad that there's a distinct lack of leaders, a distinct lack of, shall we say, middle class, or even upper working class, or aristocrats among our movement to save the white race. There's a lack of noblesse oblige, and it is the problem. It is we become timid, we become weak. So, you know, I would say to anybody who's criticizing you for supporting Tommy Robinson, I would say to that person, okay, get off your butt and organize something yourself. A lot of these critics do nothing. They just carp and they whine and they whinge. Okay, you said it's not a, you know, listeners out there, you know, if you're not happy with the various groups that are there, get out and do something. Get out and form one. You see how difficult it is. It is very difficult to organize anything in Britain today. To organize street demonstrations, to organize elections, to organize anything. It is very difficult. The trend now is to make our views illegal. Incorrect or unrespectable. They want to make them illegal. They want to stop us waking people up. So, you know, before anyone criticizes someone organizing a demonstration, how would you do it better? Could you do better? Probably not. I mean, a lot of you people who criticize do nothing. It's sad to say. And if you can't do anything yourself, then give money to groups like Radio Aaron or whatever, you know, donate. And thank you very much for those who've given some money to my legal defense over this court case tomorrow, by the way.
This is going out before your court case is actually your court case, Jez. Otherwise, I would be saying to people to go along there and support you. But we're actually pre-recording this.
The next court case that will be it'll be the 2nd of January. That's the Jack Renshaw thing. There'll be several young men in the dock at the Old Bailey, 2nd of January. Details to be confirmed. It may just be a hearing, a video link to cells. We don't know yet. But 2nd of January, a date for your diary if you wish to go and see how British justice, as it's called, is meted out.
That's going to be a particularly interesting one, I think. You know, these allegations plotting to kill a Labour MP is absolutely ridiculous. All the background to that's being kept fairly hidden. And I heard over the weekend that some of these people that have been accused of being members of the banned terrorist group National Action were never members of the group when it wasn't banned. When the group was actually in operation before Amber Rudd banned it, some of these people that have been arrested, nothing to do with it. Nobody's ever heard of them. And yet, I mean, so how are they going to be able to say that they are members of this organization when they were nothing to do with them when the organization existed, let alone now that it doesn't? When all this falls apart, they are just going to look so dreadful. This administration with Amber Rudd and Theresa May is going to go down in history as an absolute shambles. Absolute shambles. Mm. And the restrictions on people's speech.
What I would do with Amber Rudd is throw her in the Nile River and let her poison the crocodiles.
Be careful, Jez. They'll have you up for plotting to do away with Amber Rudd. he wasn't being serious.
Not
then.
Me.
Yeah.
Well, they're the guilty ones. Crocodiles, not me.
I think turn the crocodile's stomach. I don't think even then they would be able to manage eating Amber Rudd. She's got to be the worst politician we've ever had. Got to be the absolute very worst for sucking up to the Jews. It's like they'll just click their fingers and she'll do whatever for them. Anyway, we've come to the end of the podcast, Jez. I say thank you very much for coming on and good luck with tomorrow in court. Hopefully you won't be remanded once again and you'll still be free and we'll be able to get you on the Daily Traditionalist once again in the following week. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We may have Matthew Hine back tomorrow or we may not. If we don't, you'll have me. So until then, hail victory.
Listening to The Daily Traditionalist on Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.